podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
Welcome. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. It's the show where we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination, things we often dismiss in our everyday patterns and everyday habits. We have a wonderful guest today. She's my dear friend, Anna Maria Stefanescu, calling us from Romania, where she lives. She's the leader of the School of Active Dreaming in Romania. And for a number of years now, she's been hosting me for amazing adventures we've been sharing, usually up in the mountains on the border of Transylvania. We'll talk a little bit about what it means to dream in Romania, whether there are any distinctive differences in traditions of dreaming. And Anna Maria and I are quite likely to share dreams with each other and demonstrate the game we love to play, which is our Lightning Dreamwork game. Buonasera, Anna Maria.
Buonasera, Robert.
Good
so
to
nice
hear
to
you.
See you. To hear you.
Let me
yeah.
just talk a little bit. Let's riff a little bit about the adventures we're having. And by the way, for those who are interested, I will be back in Romania, thanks to Anna, at a wonderful villa overlooking Bran and Bran Castle, which the tourists think is Dracula's castle, in September. And we'll be posting full details of that at my website, mossdreams.com. But we've had such deep adventures there, haven't we? And it's amazing what it is to dream in the wildly beautiful Romanian countryside up in the Bucegerd Mountains. I must say, when we went to a villa prior to the one we used up in these mountains of Romania a few years ago, I arrived at the villa, and the host said to me, Robert, you can choose your room. And I looked at him, and he said, look, on one side of the corridor, you're going to get the bears and the dogs. They have dogs, and around these villas, the bigger bears, and the dogs bark at the bears and keep the bears some distance. And on the other side of the corridor, you just have bears and no dogs barking at the bears. So I chose the side of the corridor, of course, with the bear, but no barking dogs, though I love dogs. So that gives you a sense of the wildness and also the humor and divine comedy that sets in our Romanian dreaming. Anna, maybe the best way to begin is simply for you and I to take turns, if you have one ready, to share something like a dream with each other and play our game. That will take people into the way that our imaginations work. Would you like to do that?
Yes, actually, I have a dream. It's an older dream, but it's a dream that's intriguing for me. And it's a dream and a very, very, very short fragment that's connected to the dream. Do you think I can tell both? Because I really feel they're connected.
You can do whatever you like.
So the dream is like this. I'm in Paris. I see Mitra Eliade in front of me. He's in his latest years. He's old. And he has just discovered something important about time. He's going to give a lecture on the subject, and he needs a perfect place to do that. He calls for his assistant, and his assistant is a younger version of himself, Mitra Eliade, around the time he was in India, I think. And the lecture is going to be at a university, and the assistant, I mean, himself, the younger version, goes to my house from childhood, in the bookshelf near the window from one of my brother's room, and there is a book with the name of the perfect place to have the lecture. This was the dream, and then the short fragment that was a week later, it's like this. I'm again in the house, in my childhood house, and I see two men, and one of them I know is the keeper of time. And we go to this room that didn't exist before in the real house in my childhood, and we go to this room, and we see this kind of time portal that looks like a fireplace, and there is fire, and then this is how the dream ends.
Wow. Well, you know I love these dreams and this whole sequence, Anna Maria. So, will you give the first dream a title?
The House of Time.
House of Time. And is it the same title for the second dream, or does that have a different title?
I think it's the same title.
Okay, the House of Time, Part 1 and Part 2. Let's start by doing our simple bare-bones four-step process. People listening to this for the first time may not be familiar with it, but we have a four-step way of sharing dreams and stories. We call it the Lightning Dream Work, and the first thing is to get the story with the title. We did that. So tell me your feelings after both of these dreams.
The feelings were, I was excited, I felt enthusiasm, and in the same time, curiosity.
Yes. And the reality check, some people listening will know about Mircea Eliade, some will not. Tell us briefly, from your point of view, who is Eliade?
Well, from my point of view, I discovered Eliade when I was a child, and indeed I discovered Eliade in one of my brother's bookshelves. And from my point of view, Mircea Eliade is, I think, the most important Romanian author. And the subjects he wrote on are so vast, I don't know, running from fantasy to fiction to religion of history, right. Religion to, I don't know, everything.
Right. And Paris? Do you go to Paris? Have you been to Paris? Might you go?
Yeah, I've been to Paris once.
Okay. And we know that Eliade spent a lot of time in Paris, in fact, lived in Paris for some years. Yes, okay. So, is there something in particular you want to know about these dreams?
I want to know more about this time thing, this time theme. And I want to know more about the keeper of time, and of course I want to know more about what he discovered in the dream about time.
Yes. Yeah, well, if it's my dream, I'm thrilled and excited. I wish you'd told me this dream a few years ago, Anna, whenever it was, because, as you know, I wrote a story about Eliade recently, but there's plenty of material for that. If it's my dream, I would add it to my collection of impressions of what Eliade's been doing since he left this world. And, you know, I've written some of these in a story in my new book, Mysterious Realities, as you know. I'm fascinated that Eliade's assistant is a younger version of himself. Of course, this makes me think about the ways in which, you know, we can step outside time, and also the ways in which after death people can take on different semblances, different appearances, so that Eliade, if he chooses, can appear as a much younger, more handsome version of himself, or he can alter his features even more. I'm fascinated by the time machine that looks like a fireplace. That's very interesting. I don't think I've heard directly about a time machine that looks like a fireplace, but when I started teaching these things publicly, this is where my mind goes. I asked for a dream to guide me on public teaching of what we now call active dreaming. And in my dream, I'm in an old building, an old college, an old university setting, and I have a large class. And in the corner is a fireplace. And the fire is glowing electric blue. And in the dream, I start leading the group in a conga line, dancing through the blue fire. We come out in another world, which feels like the afterlife. And we're at a university, which I want to call alma mater, mother soul, and we're having all sorts of adventures. So going to a fireplace was certainly in that dream a way of taking a whole group outside ordinary time into a space that is somewhere between time and eternity, let us say. So I can understand that that could be a portal for time travel. And if it's my story and my life, and I'm back in a childhood place, and I remember that I first discovered Eliade on a bookshelf in my childhood home, it's all also becoming an adventure in time to me. I'm going back to my younger self. And, of course, if I live in Bucharest or near Bucharest, I can have the pleasure of walking Mantalesa Street, which is so famous from Eliade's story, and walking the scenes of his boyhood and youth, as you and I did together. Thank you for that. So I'm just tremendously excited and illuminated by it, and it confirms my impression that Eliade is still very active on the other side, in ways that we would love to know about, because what he's discovering are important discoveries for us. He is continuing his study of the nature of time itself. As you know, one of his great preoccupations was the ability to step outside history. This was actually, we have to name one driving purpose in his life, from what I've read of him, and I've read a lot, as you have. It was his desire to escape from history, to escape from the linear record and all its tragedies and all its darkness, to step outside time into a different dimension altogether. Of course, as somebody who's no longer bound to time by living in the body, he has the ability to do that. But maybe what he's now discovering will hold lessons for others. I mean, I wonder whether, Anna, you can go back into some version of this dream and bring back precise instructions from the keeper of time or from Eliade himself on what more we can do to liberate ourselves from tick-tock time. So, you know, I'm going to write from this, I'm going to create from this. Is there anything more you want to do with these dreams now we've discussed them? Do you have any further action plan or some way of honoring Eliade?
Maybe I will check again the books he wrote, and maybe there is one that I have to reread or more that I have to reread. But I think it was, yeah, in the dream it was a particular one book, but I didn't see the title.
Well, maybe you can stick your head back inside the dream. I would try to do this. I'm a bookish character, mm-hmm, as you know. And beside mm-hmm me, by the way, as we speak, Eliade, Anna, is a bookcase with two shelves absolutely stuffed with books by Eliade. It's at my right hand. I can actually reach from my desk and touch his journals and his fantasy novels and his book on shamanism and on yoga and so on. They're at my right hand. They're at arm's length away from me. Two shelves packed with books by Eliade in English and French, because I don't yet read Romanian. So, yes, that's a very good action plan. And it gives me a good lead into one of the things I hope we'd be able to talk about in this program, which is our relations with Eliade. I mean, not enough people who speak English and follow any of these things understand that Eliade wasn't only a great scholar of religion. Most people know something about that. Most Americans I know are aware that he was a pioneering student of shamanism, and his book on shamanism, first published in French in the 1950s, remains probably the pioneer Western work of scholarship on shamanism,
yeah,
and is partly responsible for the fact that so many people run around talking about shamans and shamanism today. Even Nisya really brought that to us. And some people know about his work with yoga, but not many people in English are aware that he was also a fantastic writer of the imagination. He was a novelist, he was a fantasy author, he wrote extraordinary, strange tales. And of course, the thing that I most like about him as a writer is he is one of the world's most enthusiastic journal writers. His habit of keeping a journal, which he once said was his perfect book. He said his perfect book would be a total journal into which everything could go. I sympathize with that. I'm a bit the same way. Anyway, what I want to throw in is something Anna knows about, but probably most listeners don't. In the course of my very, not only do I also love Eliade, but I've accepted assignments from him. And I've gone to Romania at Anna's invitation again and again. Every time I've not been able to escape a close-up encounter with Eliade, sometimes several of them, during the shamanic group journeys with the drumming that we do, and in dreams and in other ways. And at one point, he pushed me to read all the works of fiction and fantasy and imagination and all the letters and journals and so on that he has written. I couldn't fulfill the assignment completely because some of them are still in Romanian and had never been translated. And he gave me impressions of his transitions in the Bardo state. And I actually wrote these in a story called Eliade or Messia, Eliade on the Isthmus, in my new book, Mysterious Reality. So you can read some of my first-hand impressions of what Eliade has been doing on the other side, and now they are enhanced and expanded by Anna's breathtakingly exciting account of Eliade in Paris. Paris is very important to Eliade. In my own encounters with him, I found him thinking and remembering very intensely what it was like to be in Paris towards the end of World War II, and what it was like to be in Paris, I mean, almost starvingly poor and cold, in the years that he was trying to become a successful novelist, but succeeded really best in bringing through his text of shamanism. So that's a really thrilling introduction to the theme of dreaming in Romania. I'm convinced that we dream with the ancestors of the lands where we travel. Mircea had this tragedy in his life of never being able to go back to his birth country because of World War II and because of political allegiances and all of that,
yeah,
because of what happened in Romania. He could never go back, but he remained, as Anna says, probably the greatest of Romanian writers, not only in one but in many genres. And despite a life that was deeply shadowed and troubled in many ways, he's a heroic figure to me, partly because he survived the shadow and brought so much to the world, and of course survived and prospered at the University of Chicago as professor of comparative religion. All right, Anna, I'm going to share also a somewhat old dream with you, just fell out of my journal. I'm not saying it's a Romanian dream, but it's got a slightly Romanian quality about it, you'll see. I joke to people when they say there are national differences or cultural differences in dreaming. I sometimes say, you know, there's a joke in this, I sometimes say, well, when I go to Romania, the typical Romanian dream begins, I was walking in the cemetery, and sometimes followed by, and a grave opened. And then I'll jump in and I'll say, but typically, sure, it's not a vampire dream at all. The grave opens and someone appears in a loving and helpful and sometimes even guiding way.
Yeah.
You shared a dream with me of that kind, and I've heard others.
Yeah.
So this doesn't begin with a graveyard, but so I don't want to mislead you. But, yet it might sort of. So I'm just going to give you a dream. Anna, and I'm going to ask you to play Dream Help and Dream Guide for me. Is that okay?
Sure. Please.
So my title, it might need some explanation, or perhaps the explanation will come through the narrative itself. My title is Finding My Niche, like a niche in the wall, like a special place in the house. Finding my niche in a new subtle body, like a new energy body. So I'm already explaining the title. Finding my niche
in a new subtle body.
A new subtle body. Subtle body like energy body. Okay.
Yes.
Here's the dream. I am in a great open shaft, like a tunnel, that goes deep into the earth. There are niches in the earthen walls, suffused with golden light. In one of these niches, you know, it's like a little hollow in the wall. In one of these niches, I find an energy body that corresponds to my own. In other words, it looks like my body. It is color, it is white, it's pure white, this energy body, like alabaster or marble. I'm awed by its flawless beauty. It's in the posture reminiscent of Rodin's sculpture, The Thinker. It has never been used, but may now be available. When I place my hands on it, it gives way a little bit under my touch, like plasticine or soft clay. I can mold this energy body any way I like. With care, I can shape it into a plausible version of my present self, stronger and more beautiful, but not impossibly so. I understand that the thing to do, once I'm satisfied with the shaping, is to put this on like a garment, like clothing. But how do I get inside? There are many possible entry points, I understand. The crown of the head or the mouth would work, but best always as the gateway of the heart. I experiment with getting inside this form and bringing it into rosy pink life. I realize that in doing this, I want to leave an old, much-traveled garment behind, like old underclothes. I visualize putting the old garment in a hamper, in a container, in the niche, and sealing the top. This is all very exciting inside the dream. I wonder if I can help people in need of healing and regeneration to make an exchange of this kind. So this is a dream, and it just fell out. It's about 3 years ago, but I thought, you know, it's got a slightly Romanian feel to it. Let's give it to Anna. I haven't done any real work on it, so you can ask me some questions and see where it takes us.
Well, okay, so we have the title of the dream, and what was the feeling when you woke up?
Oh, I was excited in the dream, and as I rose from the dream, I was still very excited, very excited.
What are the real elements? Or?
Well, I'm very conscious that there are subtle bodies. There's an astral body, there's an etheric body, and so on, and that in life and after death, we can travel around and survive after death in vehicles beyond the physical body. I'm very aware of that. It's central to my teaching. I give classes involving this. I write about this. I've studied it. I've monitored it for a long time. This is a subtle body or an energy body in a form a bit different from what I had experienced or been conscious of before. But the theme of the subtle bodies and the way that consciousness or soul might transit between them after death and in other ways has always interested me. So, and the tunnel, the great open shaft, like a mine shaft going down into the earth, that's familiar to me from other dreams. I've had the experience of going down a shaft, a vertical shaft or tunnel of this kind, the way you might go down deep into the earth in order to enter a mine or indeed to enter a grave hidden deep in the earth. So that's familiar landscape too. And the whole idea of regeneration is a huge theme. It's there in our biomedicine, and it's there in my personal attitude towards life, that we have the power to regenerate. So the idea that, at least in imagination or energetically, I could swap an aging, sickly body, or so could someone else, for another energy form, is deeply interesting to me.
Yeah, so what do you want to know about the dream?
Well, I want to know what I can take from this dream to assist in regeneration, whether it's for myself or for other people. And you know what? We'll continue the conversation on this dream after the break, because we're just being curious.
Okay.
We have to take a short break. So you have a moment to reflect on it. And I was excited because I felt the power of regeneration in the dream. I also felt I was receiving deep instruction, experiential instruction. Instruction is direct revelation about some secrets of life and death that are of great interest to me and probably to others, secrets involving the vehicles of consciousness, the subtle bodies. We're talking to Anna Maria Stefanescu, who leads our School of Active Dreaming in Romania, wonderful teacher, therapist, counselor, and friend. We'll be back after the break.
Give yourself some love with our self-care programs at hrnradio.com.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. Our wonderful guest is Anna Maria Stefanescu, dear friend, counselor, therapist, leader of our School of Active Dreaming in Romania, who keeps dreaming me back to her country to lead adventures on the border of Transylvania. Another one coming up in September. The dates are up at my website, mossdreams.com. We'll have full information soon. And we started talking about one of my dreams, I think one that had a slightly Romanian feel, involving a passage into the deep earth and discovering some kind of subtle energy body and feeling it might be possible to take on the qualities of that subtle body. And I threw it to Anna to play guide for me and give me some feedback on this dream. So we'll continue that conversation if Anna is ready.
Well, it's fascinating that you shared this dream, because 2 or 3 years ago, I had a dream. So if it were my dream, I would remember a dream of mine from 2 or 3 years ago when I entered a sort of a cave or a defile in the mountains, and it was dark. And on the right and the left, there were some niches, exactly as you mentioned. And on every niche, there was sleeping or lying or I don't know, a man or a woman. And I had this torch in my hand, and what I did, what I knew I had to do, was to somehow transform through fire the man or the woman sleeping in every niche. And they woke up and something happened to them, and the color changed and they became golden or white or silvery or something like that. So if it were my dream, I would remember this dream of mine, and I would say that for me it would be something connected to the power of fire, of transformation through fire. I don't know exactly in what way, but this is what appeared in my mind as I listened to the dream.
That's beautiful feedback, and by the way, you are giving us an example of the way that the best comment we can sometimes offer on someone else's experience is to bring up an experience of our own. And it's interesting that when I heard your dream, I brought up my dream of dancing through an electric blue fire. Now you hear my dream, and you bring up your dream in which fire is the key to bringing to life these beings that are forms that are not yet fully ensouled but can come alive through the gift of spiritual fire. So there's a sort of weaving between the dreams we're telling each other, as if they're all now part of a shared story. And this is very exciting, because as I take your dream now and apply it to the dream I shared of this beautiful, subtle vehicle, plastic, like plasticine, but not yet apparently alive, and I try to imagine what it would be to step into it, I see it coming alive now, becoming golden and glowing with fire from the heart of the person who now brings it alive and makes it their own vehicle. It's not clear to me from your dream whether the beings in the niches are waiting to be brought alive with some spirit or soul from some other place, or spirit or soul from the person who's doing the operation and bringing them alive. It sounds as if your role, if it's my dream, if my role in the dream is to bring soul or spirit from wherever, from whatever source, into these forms. In my dream, this form is an option for me, for my spirit and soul to use and to occupy and to bring alive. But I'm also thinking about how forms like this could work for other people. It all remains mysterious, and yet it's fascinating. And the interplay between the four dreams we've now shared, two of yours and two of mine, is very exciting for me. It's lit a gentle fire, and the gentle electric blue fire, which is flickering with possibilities. So,
I was listening to you speaking now, it was something like, if it were my dream, I would think of transmitting this fire just by intention, and exactly thinking of it like a gentle fire, but a fire.
Yes. All right. Can you ask me for an action plan?
Yeah. So what's your action plan?
Well, I think I'm going to try and marry the four stories that we've got here. I mean, put them together. I think I'm going to write some version of the story which is enhanced and expanded by what you brought me and all that we've shared, and then I think I'm going to try and meditation or dream reentry. It might be the same thing, to see what happens if I put fire, spiritual fire, fire of intention, heart fire, into this dormant, sleeping, beautiful form. What happens at that point? What am I producing? What will become of it? I think I'm going to explore that experientially. So we're talking now about a technique which in the dream school we call dream reentry, which is when you go back in the dream with some kind of intention, you try to accomplish something inside the dream space. I think I'm going to do that, but I think that also creatively I'm going to weave together elements from all the different images that are now dancing in my mind from the beautiful, poetic streaming of four dreams between Anna Maria and myself. So thank you for that. Talk to us a little bit. We announced this show as Dreaming in Romania. Tell me a little bit. Tell us all a little bit about some of your special memories or favorite memories of the adventures we've had in Romania and what is coming out for people through the kind of dreaming that we do together. Give us some scenes from what we've shared and what you do in your own practice with people as a dream teacher and guide.
Yeah, I was thinking today, as I remember that this was the day when we were going to meet on air, that it was 2012 when you first came in Romania. And from that year, I remember a lot of bear energy in that group, and also a lot of angel and archangel energy in the group.
I remember that vividly. Let me just support you there. When I first went to Romania at your invitation, we go up into the mountains and we're opposite the Karaiman Monastery, founded because of the dream.
I think
we're going to bring up the old spirits of the land. We're going to bring up Zalmoxis, who is the shaman god of old Romania, sometimes depicted as a bear or as having something sometimes depicted as a wolf. So I think we're going to call up Zalmoxis and the old Dacian deities. What do we get? We get the angels. We get Gabriel. We get Michael. We're absolutely infested in a positive way by the angels. I'm drawing pictures of Gabriel. I'm having personal encounters with Gabriel. And for the first time in many years, I actually go to church because it's just the Orthodox church in the monastery. Because it actually happens to be the feast, the festival of Gabriel and Michael, who was celebrated on the same day in Romania. And I blame you for that, Anna Maria. I think your mystical connections made it happen. The angels filled the air. They were unavoidable. It was a very happy experience and absolutely happily overwhelming for the group. So, yes, we got a lot of angels, didn't we?
Yeah. And then the second year, I remember vividly that journey with the Blue Lake of Healing. And when at the end of the workshop, I think we gathered the cards with the journey to the Blue Lake of Healing, and then every week or something like that, all the group received one of the cards. It was amazing. And also the same year was the journey to the Temple of Zalmoxis.
Yes. We'll talk about that when we come back. We have to take another break. And so I said,
yes.
I went expecting to meet Zalmoxis, this mysterious shaman god of the Dacians. We did meet him, or at least we met him at a place of his healing in another gathering. So we're going to go on dreaming in Romania, telling you some extraordinary stories with my dear friend Anna Maria Stefanescu after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss with my wonderful guest, Anna Maria Stefanescu, called on the phone from Romania. By the way, want to read more about some of this, do get my book, Mysterious Realities, in particular, go to the story about Mircea Eliade, the great Romanian scholar and author in the afterlife, as I have experienced him. When I first went to Romania, thanks to Anna Maria, I was aware but there is a mysterious god of the ancient Dacian people of those mountains, people who were greatly feared by the Romans. Romans had a very hard time dealing with them. They went into battle under the banner of a wolf-headed dragon. And I had read in an essay by Eliade called Zalmoxis, the Vanishing God, more easily available in English than in Romanian, unlike most of his works. I'd read in this book, which I think I first found when I was a student, when I was an undergraduate. I have a very old Harper Perennial edition of it. I'd read in an early essay of Eliade about Zalmoxis, this mysterious god of his ancient Dacian people, and he reminded me or taught me that actually in a dialogue of Plato, Zarmox is quoted, and we get the first time in literature we get the statement, you cannot heal the body without healing the soul. And this is said to be, in a dialogue of Plato, the teaching of this mysterious shaman god king of the Thracians. The Greek geographers say, they meant to say the Dacians, but it's called the Thracians. Anyway, so to cut to the chase, I'm reading that the first moment in literary history when someone says, the body cannot be healed without healing the soul, this is attributed to Zarmoxis. So I arrived in the mountains of Romania very quickly, having been told that there was a site there sacred to Zarmoxis, very interested in meeting the ancient Dacian deity, if available. I'm not sure we ever did meet him exactly, but we had an astonishing experience in one of our groups when we were called to an ancient temple of healing where things were done with lights and were done with energy in a way which was thrilling and deeply healing for the group. And then Anna Maria and her husband, Costine, another dear friend, took me to Samizdat, the ancient capital of the Dacians, and we were able to drum there at the site of the ancient temple. And I had some sightings, and they've continued, of what might have gone on there in ancient times. I'm not sure that I ever met Zarmoxis, except I must add, Anna, that last time I was in Romania working with another dream that took us into this territory, I saw an amazing, imposing, fierce, queenly figure who seemed like possibly an ancient queen the Dacians, and behind her, almost mountainous in size, there was a giant bear, not an ordinary bear at all, who was standing around her, beside her, behind her, rising 6 times, 10 times as high as the female figure. And that was not an ordinary bear. So I did have that vision last time I was leading a group in Romania.
Yes. It was this year. Right?
It was this year, last time. It was not long ago. It was in October.
Yes. And also I remember from Salamisar Jatuza that photo I took with the fountain of light near you. Do you remember it?
Yes.
There is that photo with the streaming light right near you.
Sometimes these things burst through, spill over into physical reality, because when I was drumming at Samizdat, the ancient capital of the Dacians and the site of this temple of Zarmoxis, which we had dreamed as a group before we went there, some of us, and we saw fountains of light used in healing. And I was taking a photo of me just there on the site, and there is in the photo a fountain of light that seems to be bursting from the earth and shooting into the sky. It's quite astonishing. It's right there. Not just a smudge or a smear. There is a fountain of multicolored lights. I wouldn't say rainbow-colored because it doesn't actually conform to the spectrum. So it was as if we were given, you know, a sort of thumbprint from the deeper reality saying, okay, yeah, something really is going on here. Trust it, believe it. Even people who can't see the invisible with their eyes open or shut can see a visible sign, a visible souvenir of this kind, indicating that something is going on. So as you might be picking up from this conversation with Anna Maria, we're talking about a country where the veil, where the curtain between the world is rather thin. I find it an extraordinary place, particularly when you get out of the mountains of the villa that we use, an extraordinary place for us to dream deep and immediately get results. I mean, whatever technique we're using, for example, we might be doing dream reentry. Someone has a troubling dream. Let's go back inside it. Let's get to the root of it. Let's find out what's going on. And I tap the drum, and immediately we are there. It's a place, it's a situation where our travels, our conscious dream travels, our shamanic journeys become very easy. It's a place where seership, the ability to see between the world, see across space and time, is not as difficult as it might seem to be in other places. What are some of your other favorite experiences or scariest experiences in the course of what we've been doing in Romania, Anna?
Well, one of my favorite is the one with do you remember the dream theater with bubbles and angels again? I think it was at the villa with a bear on one side and the dogs on the other side. And we had this dream theater with a wonderful dream. And the dreamer shared how the angels came from the sky like bubbles, like soap bubbles. And then all the group engaged in this dream theater. And suddenly, of course, all the room was filled with actors playing angels and bubbles and children playing. It was one of my favorite experiences.
We always do dream theater. You're reminding me that the very first time I came, we did a lot of dream theater with experiences of soul recovery, of soul coming back to people, and how healing that was. People had journeys in which they felt they'd come in touch with, you know, the magical child that had gone missing from their life, or
yeah.
some other aspect of themselves, and then we enacted that and celebrated it, in a sense, sealed it inside the body so it was safe. And I remember from that very first series of dream theaters we did, I got cast to play a corrupt Romanian policeman. Remember that? Maybe it wasn't all that bad, but there were some Romanian policemen in the script, and no one seemed to be too keen on Romanian policemen. And I was cast to play one of the Romanian cops, so I was really thrown in a deep that time. It was a very funny theater, too. I love the dream theater. I know you do, too. You've done workshops of your own where you guide dream theater in performance, and we know how energizing it is, how happy it is, how much laughter comes through. Sometimes there are tears. Sometimes there's some deep grief and some dark passages to be gotten through, but at the end of the day, the dream theater always gets everybody animated and alive and brings the group together and embodies sometimes, you know, greater powers, like the angels and the bubbles coming down from the sky. They're in the room. And when it's going really deep and strong, you don't doubt it. It's all there. It's constellated, the Jungians would say. The energy is constellated. It's crystallized. It's embodied around you. Yes, so some of my favorite memories involve the dream theater, too.
Yeah. And then there was last year, I think, Making Death Your Ally, when again dream theater, and it was so intense and so vivid and so real that at the end of the dream theater, I asked you, maybe we are all dead, and we are doing this dream theater so that we will learn that we are in this condition. And then you looked at me and said, well, finally, someone who really understands what we are doing here.
Your eyes went fairly wide at that moment. There was a moment in my life, long before I met you, Anne, I was walking in Manhattan on the Upper East Side, and there's a beggar, a panhandler, who's scaring people by crying out, you're in the underworld, you're in the underworld, and people are either throwing money at him or running away, or both throwing money and running away. He speaks to me without looking at me. I pause and I look down at him, and I said to him what I said to you. Finally, someone who understands exactly where he is. And he starts shaking, and he offers me all the money he's been collecting. He thinks he's met the angel of death. It was delightful. All right, on that cheerful note, we'll pause for one more break. We have one more good segment with Anna Maria. We're talking to Anna Maria Stefanescu from Romania, leader of our School of Active Dreaming there. Having a great, fun time reminiscing about the adventures we've had on the edges of Transylvania. We'll be back after the break.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do hop over to my recently revamped website, mossdreams.com. It's a lot slicker and cleaner now. And have a look at the events calendar, where you'll find, amongst other things, the dates for the next adventure I will lead in Anna Maria's country, Romania, in September next year. We talk to Anna Maria Stefanescu, leader of our School of Active Dreaming in Romania, therapist, counselor, facilitator of many programs of her own. And we've just been talking about dream theater, and the conversation has slid, finally, Making Death Your Ally, which is the title of actually my favorite workshop amongst all my workshops. We did it in Romania last year, within 2 kilometers of Dracula's castle. What a perfect place to meet death. And I think this particular version of this workshop may be just about my favorite amongst all the versions I've led. It is so powerful. It's so deep. I hope we'll do it in Romania again in some year to come, Anna. We'll wait for a little bit, but people have been asking me when we're going to do it again. I just wanted to make a few points about dreaming and death and just kick them back and forth between us gently. I tell people that dreaming is central to the art of dying, because when we dream, we travel. And you know, the Plains Indians, like the Lakota in North America, say the path of the soul after death is the same as the path of the soul in dreams. The path of the soul after death is the same as the path of the soul in dreams, except we might add you don't return to the body. I think this is true. I think so many of our dreams, including the spontaneous night dreams we don't understand and often don't remember, our experiences of traveling, and in our dreams we travel to places where the dead are alive, and we travel to cities and towns and villages and playgrounds and schools and places of regeneration and healing, that are places that are also inhabited by the departed. So through our dreams we're getting familiar with realms beyond the physical, and if we just become aware that we're already traveling in such realms, we're much better prepared to meet death. But of course, one of the things that I love to do, which we did in Romania last year and we'll do again, I like to impersonate death from time to time and put people through an interrogation of the kind that the angel of death might put you through to make sure that you're going to pass on with minimal regrets, to make sure that you do a life review and prepare for the life review that will follow death so you can go forward, you know, in better spirits. And we did all of that, and it drove people deep, and some people were scared and wanted to run away, and some people about to break down. But at the end of it, I think everybody sort of broke through. And I remember, you know, great adventures deepening as we went along, and people coming out of it all thrilled and spilled and full of some courage and clarity for life choices, and sometimes coming out of it with more of a sense of the divine comedy of life. Because if you wake up to the idea, I'm going back to what you quoted from that theater, if we are open to the idea that we are in the afterlife right now, because we died to another world in order to come here, and when we leave this world, we'll be born into a world beyond this one. If we're open to that idea, you are in the afterlife right now. You're in the Bardo right now. You came from somewhere else. You died to that other world, and then at the end of this life, you'll be born into something else. Then it turns a lot of our familiar habits and routine, you know, attitudes upside down, and maybe it makes it possible for us to live more bravely and at least to live more humorously. So that was going on in that theater when the angel of death spoke to you like that.
Yeah, and I saw these days on a social media network that photo with in the bad experience. And I'm thinking, how is it all a matter of perspective, in the bad experience, out of bad experience?
Yes. Yes. Well, yes, that's true. What else would you like to tell us about, Ada, from your adventures, maybe from your own adventures in sharing dreams with people in Romania? And, of course, you're a young mother now, the beautiful young daughter, Miranda, whose coming was announced in dreams in various ways. I wonder when she's going to start telling you dreams. I wonder when you're going to start writing down her stories and helping her to, encouraging her to draw them, because this is a great opportunity. Young children are actually the masters of dreams and imagination. If we just encourage them to say their piece and tell their story and then celebrate it by doing a drawing, eventually writing something. I wonder what dreams Miranda's going to tell you as we go along.
Yes, yes. We already have this mini ritual every morning. I ask her what she dreamt about, and usually she says she dreamt about stars or planets or whales or trees. These four themes appear most often in what she responds. So she's.
I remember telling me that she dreamed about a whale one morning.
Yes.
When we were at the
village. Yes.
Well, that's terrific. And then the next step is, which you're probably doing, is to celebrate those dreams by drawing a picture of a star or a whale, or maybe getting a toy or whatever. You're doing that already, probably. And then the stories are going to grow. And then what I found with my own daughters is one of the key things to do is to simply listen and celebrate it. You don't need to interpret. I mean, maybe the dream requires action of some kind, either to send away a bad feeling or a bad episode or to celebrate a more positive one. But we don't need to sort of interpret, really. We might need to, you know, decide on some helpful action, whether it is to shoo away something unwanted or whether it's to celebrate something that is more creative. But the first requirement for adults to have access to young children is simply to listen very carefully. Yeah, and you do that, to be absolutely present, and basically to encourage the child to share more and more. And, of course, if we are good role models because we're keeping journals and writing and drawing things ourselves from our dreams, then the child is encouraged to start and embark on a practice which will eventually be keeping a secret book, keeping a journal of dreams when they're old enough to write these things for themselves. And along the way to that, we can help them write. And the result of this is going to be a treasury for the whole family. I have the journals my daughters wrote up to the age of 9 when they all said the same thing. You can't read it anymore, Daddy. It's my secret book. And that means it's a real journal. So that's one of the things I remember about being present to young children, my own young children, and listening to their dreams and stories.
Yes, yes, it's a practice that's going to grow for sure with Miranda too. And it's a joy to see that she responds to this approach and she enjoys doing it.
Yes, yes. And we have so much to learn from them. We have so much to learn. When my youngest daughter was not yet 4 years old, she came into my room at 3 o'clock in the morning, said, Daddy, I'm having a terrible dream. And I look at her. She doesn't seem to be too agitated. Okay, tell me. Yucky monsters, yes. They're chasing me, yes. So, she says, I put on a dragon costume and I chased them back. This is a natural shamanism of a small child. And then in the morning she comes in with great satisfaction. Daddy, you know what happened after I chased the monsters? Tell me. They turned into rainbow-colored birds. They say they're now going to live in my pillow and they'll help me if anything bad is happening during the night.
Uh-huh.
That's a whole course in shamanic dreaming from a child not yet 4 years old. It's not
so
because
simple,
she's my
yeah.
daughter. It's because she has the magic of the young child who has not been bullied and pushed by the adult world to crush, you know, what they understand about dreaming. They live closer to the dream world than most than adults do. So, you know, until the adult world gets hold of them and says, stop it, don't talk about it, it's not real, they are prime sources, and they can even be teachers in the way that that dream is. So, you know, so you are very lucky to have this beautiful Miranda around for all sorts of reasons, but one of the reasons you're lucky is you're going to get all sorts of fresh material. You're going to get a whole course in shamanic dreaming on top of what you know and on creative dreaming and on creative story-making from this beautiful little girl. Good luck
I'll
with
be
all
a
that.
Good student and learn it all. I'll listen.
Well, we're going to have to pause for another break. After that, we're basically just going to come back to say Mutumesk. Thank you very much. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Martin. Our delightful guest today is the leader of our dream school in Romania, Anna Maria Stepanescu. We'll be back briefly after the break.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You've been listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss and our wonderful guest, Anna Maria Stepanescu, calling in from Romania, where she hosts Adventures in Active Dreaming with me every fall. It's coming up in September 2019. Go to mossdreams.com and look at the events calendar. You'll find the dates, and we'll be posting more about the content, but you can be sure it's going to be a rich adventure. Thank you so much for joining us, Anna Maria, and for all you're doing.
Thank you, Robert. And thank you for coming back to Romania every year.
Well, I love it. You dream me back, and it's irresistible. So thank you very much. Love to your family, and love to all our Romanian dream family. Mulțumesc, Lauri Vedere, and to everybody listening. May your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.